Members of the club, members of this great assembly, members who remember past members, as incantor of this bubonic gathering, I tilt my lance at those two inflammatory swells before me. These kneeling neophytes who have guzzled all the brandy and toasted Hochmagandy. They dare make motion to enter our sacred mysteries. What shall I do? Shall I throw them out of doors?
No!
Ah, it seems the neophytes have found favor. Very well. On your belly like the snakes. Do you, Robert, and you, Archibald, vow on pain of gall and bladder to fulfill the onerous task set down before you?
I shall not fail.
I shall not fail.
So be it. This night the moon is full. The hunter seeks the prey. Silence! To your feet! Receive the sacred parchment. Now open and remember one night, one chance.
The devil is a clever fellow.
Were he to come in his natural state, horn and hoof, then those approached would shun him like the plague. But he wears a tile hat to disguise his horns, a long coat to hide that tail, kid gloves to slide over those scaly hands, and then he crooks a finger, saying, "What shall we do today?" He moves in all circles, both high and low, inviting little mischief which leads to darker deeds. Conscience must prevent us following that crooked finger, and if conscience falls dozing, the law never sleeps. This was my train of thought as I listened to the good conclusion of a case of mine in the courts of session. Not that conscience had much part in it. No, the devil had merely crooked his finger and invited four dab-hand virtuoso pickpockets up from London to ply their trade in Edinburgh. I'd marked them as high-class snibs, then taken the part of a country bumpkin wandering Scotland Street station waiting for the Northern Line. They had sneered me, and my assistant Mulholland had sneered them. A most satisfactory conclusion. They had been pocketed, as it were.
Prisoners will stand for sentence.
Mr. McCleavy, sir, we have a crime on our hands.
Shh. This is a rare occasion, Mulholland.
Prisoners, not often have I to pass sentence on people of your description from England. One man, three women, steeped in fine clothes, steeped in debauchery, and caring not whence comes the money to buy it all. What did Scotland ever do to you that you should come here hundreds of miles to prey upon our unwary subjects? You forget that in comparison to England, we are poor and therefore less inclined to lose what we have gained by hard labor. You also forget that we have not renounced our emblem of the thistle, the pricks of which you may expect to feel when I now sentence you to 60 days hard labor of a different kind. 60 days? I am only sorry it cannot be made months.
Aye, nothing like an English thief for bringing out the best in Sheriff Hallard.
You have made a wrong calculation, not only as to the intelligence and sharpness of our people, but also the bold adroitness of our detectives in the shape of Inspector McCleavy over there. 60 days. Think on your sins.
Court will rise.
High praise.
You had a part in it. Small, but vital.
Thank you, sir. Now, may I speak to you?
Inspector, well done. You bring them in, I'll crack the bone.
Your servant, Sheriff Howard.
We all serve Justice McCleavy. She rules the roost. Good day to you.
Good day, sir. Appreciation is a fine thing, Mulholland.
I'm sure it is. Now, if I may have a
Yes. Don't drag it out, man.
Sixth commandment, sir.
Thou shalt not kill.
Broken in Galloway Close.
Female, 20 years or so of age.
Head bashed in. Sharp instrument. Thin skull by the looks of it. Blood all over the place. She must have spouted like a fountain.
Many things spout, Dr. Jarvis.
Bruising on the body, arms and legs, but not from last night. An old history of such.
But these are clothes.
They are not mine.
A bit showy.
Cheap and gaudy. I hesitate to come between you and any great deductions, Inspector, but I would hazard possibly a nymph of the pavé?
Peggy Ambrose.
You know her?
I know all the nymphs.
From close at hand?
She used to work for Jean Brash in the Happy Land.
Ah, a common whore. Hardly worth the sweat of my brow.
Rich or poor, murder is murder.
Well said, Mulholland.
The way these people live, scarcely murder, more like natural selection. Yeah, you are aware of Darwin's theories, McCleavy.
Ape to man, in some cases, hardly worth the jump.
I found this in the wound.
Splinter of wood, varnished by the looks of it. I'll keep this, if I may, Dr. Jarvis. And I'll expect your full report in due course.
You shall have it, McCleavy. Man to ape.
He likes to provoke, Dr. Jarvis.
He tries hard.
He doesn't really have to try.
All he has to do is be himself.
Where to now, sir?
For you, where the body was found, Galloway's Close. Ask around, any inquisitive body hanging out a window in the taverns or on the streets. I am for a house of easy virtue where wallets and watches disappear like snow.
The Happy Land.
Jean Brash. If I time correctly, the Queen of Crime may brew me up some coffee.
Peggy Ambrose. She was a bright spark, but willful and a wild temper.
I'm sure you walked in fear of her.
How's the coffee?
Splendid, as always.
She left about a year ago. Some regular supposed to set her up, but the last I heard, she was snacking round the streets again.
She was marked up. Old bruises.
She never got them here.
Did she have a pounce?
I don't know. I can make inquiries.
Anything else about her?
Such as?
You tell me.
Always thought she was a cut above the rest. Scarlet garter.
What?
She always wore a scarlet garter. A cut above, she thought.
No sign of that with the corpse. Thank you for the coffee.
My pleasure. If I hear anything, I'll let you know. Dead hussies are bad for business.
Your business is always bad, Jean.
But you surprise me, McCleavy.
In what way?
Taking such trouble over a gutter body.
That's my business.
But have you not more important things to do for more important people?
Peggy Ambrose was murdered. That makes her very important. To me. Good day, Mr. Sprash.
Good day, Mr. McCleavy.
I had a sense that she might be hiding something, but then I always have that sense with Jean. Nevertheless, her jibe irritated me almost as much as that of Dr. Jarvis. Neither believed that Peggy Ambrose would get justice. One, because she did not merit such a privilege, the other because it only existed as a force of persecution. High and mighty, low and devious, and in the middle walks the poor policeman. I rendezvoused with Mulholland, and we brought each other up to date. I had discovered not much, save for a missing garter. He had found even less. We tramped the wines, trying all her known haunts without success. Then I thought of asking at some of the handsome cabs which serviced the area.
I knew Peggy. She was a wild wee thing. I whisking up my skirt, terrified of horses. Full of life, you can.
Did you see her that night?
No, I did not.
Anything else in note?
Probably nothing.
Don't be shy, Andy.
Later on, Galloway's Close, I dropped off two young bloods.
And?
Well, they were a bit, well, inebriate. Worse a drink. One of them was fencing again in the middle of the road.
Fencing?
With his walking stick.
Varnished?
Eh?
Did it shine in the light?
Quite light. Galloway's Close is nothing but shadows.
Any names mentioned?
No. But one was bawling back to the other about a trophy. We may not return without the trophy, said he.
Would you recognize them again?
No. It was dark. I wasn't really looking.
I don't suppose you remember where you picked them up.
Haymarket.
A fine, respectable place.
Aye. Even the pigeons wear gold watches.
I see no pigeons with watches, sir.
A flight of fancy.
I thought it must be.
But what we do have, tucked away discreetly in the square, are a number of gentlemen's clubs.
Drinking dens.
Exactly. Where respectable men, free from the scrutiny of wifely eye, busy themselves in worship of Bacchus.
They get drunk.
Indeed. There is one, right here, for medical men. What do you think its name is?
The Skull and Bone Society?
No. It is called the Trophy Club.
It's a long shot, sir.
You have something better to suggest?
McCleavy, what are you doing here?
Dr. Jarvis, I have need of entry.
Sorry, Inspector, medical men only. Try the criminal profession, the least lobby strippers, perhaps.
We just get blackballed, sir.
True enough. The poor policeman. Qualified for nothing and welcome nowhere. Oh, come in, man, come in. I was only teasing. You are most welcome. Welcome to the club. This is our main assembly room. Impressive, is it not?
Very. These portraits are...
Past and present members, surgeons, doctors, scientists, the great and the good.
What is your place in this pantheon?
I am the Incantor. Chairman, if you like. Elected for this year. A great honor.
I bow before you.
You're lucky to find me here at all. I was just making sure the servants had cleaned up after last night.
What happened last night?
Club business. Now, what do you want here, McCleavy?
What about Burke and Hare? Would they count as medical members?
Certainly not. This is an exclusive club. One has to be well-connected. And even then, before admittance, there are tasks to be performed.
Like operations?
No. The initiate is given one night to bring back a trophy. Failure to do so means the game is over.
What kind of trophies?
Many and various. Kept in all these glass cases. You see, a peacock feather from a lady's hat, a silver buckled slipper, an ear trumpet.
What was your trophy, sir?
A lady's corset.
Surely you could find that close to home.
It was of a... certain size.
I'd like to try that.
I'm afraid, Constable, you lack a certain...
And last night was trophy night?
It was, and both neophytes came through with flying colours.
Neil?
Never mind.
And what did they bring back?
In the corner of that case, it is displayed.
This one here?
No, beyond you, Inspector. Most things are, I'm afraid. And then I really must ask you to go. I have appointments.
Uh-huh. A scarlet garter, sir.
And you never answered my question, McCleavy. What is it you want here?
Dr. Jarvis was most annoyed when we sequestered the garter as evidence. We had no proof, said he. Circumstantial, said he. A wild goose chase, said he. Indeed, he much resembled a goose as he flapped and honked and ruffled up his plumage. The idea that a member of this august establishment could commit any kind of crime was unthinkable, unless you had the warped mind of men who spent their time in the Stygian pits of Leith. His indignation was such that I feared he was about to explode and cover the place in feathers. He even went so far as to accuse Mulholland and I of being jealous of better-class society, but to carry forth the avian metaphor, it was water off a duck's back. He stopped spluttering long enough to give the names of the two young bloods sent out that night to seek the Holy Grail. Both medical students at university. One, Archibald Dingwall, a rich merchant's son, and the other, a name that caused me some perturbation. The son of the good sheriff I had spoken with that morning, Robert Hallard.
I can't believe it. The poor girl... That's a terrible thing to happen. I mean, she was full of fun. Thought it was a great adventure.
Did she know?
Aye. I mean, we were desperate. Where to find such a knick-knack at that time of the night? So we tried some of the street kitties, and we got lucky.
More than she did.
True enough.
She made no protest when you took it from her?
No. Gave us a long look at where she kept it. Oh, I mean, we paid her good money. £5.
No money on the corpse.
Well, there's your motive. Somebody saw her get the cash. My father's a great one for motive. He speaks very highly of you, Inspector.
The respect is mutual.
Come on! Pat him down!
I better get back. We're playing Trinity on Saturday. Squash their Irish noses flat.
That might not be so easy.
You've got the build of a good back row.
Shinty's my game.
That's for hooligans.
It has its rules.
Can I go, Inspector?
I may need to talk to you again.
Any time. Anything I can do to help. It's a terrible thing.
I'm sure his heart's broken.
Hmm.
You didn't mention...
You mentioned quite enough. Sometimes, Mulholland, it is better to keep the powder dry rather than blow it on one big noise.
I don't follow you, sir.
Questions demand answers. Statements answer themselves. Nothing to say.
A statement, sir. Answered itself.
And you hadn't met this girl before?
Never.
Did Robert Hallard know her?
Not at all. We tried at least a dozen or so of these women before we happened upon her. By chance. Luck.
Luck? And you gave her £2 for this garter?
Five. A single note.
That was the end of the transaction?
Certainly. I couldn't wait to get out of there.
Why?
Surely that's obvious.
Forgive me for saying so, Mr. Dingwall, but you don't seem a very clubbable man.
It was my father's idea.
Peggy Ambrose.
Beg pardon?
The girl. That was her name.
Really?
Any idea why someone would want to murder her?
Not remotely. A possible motive? Robbery, I suppose. The money we gave her.
So you may have inadvertently caused her death.
I think that's a rather far-fetched diagnosis.
And you saw no one nearby?
I didn't look around.
When she hiked up her skirt to get the garter, did you look then?
Perhaps it was her pimp that murdered her. I'm told that often happens. Is that the correct word, Inspector? Pimp?
One of many.
Well, if you have no further queries, Inspector, I must get back to my studies.
For the moment, I'm done. Unless the constable has any other questions, or even statements.
What are you studying, Mr. Dingwall?
The spleen.
What that toffee-nosed, shrimp-faced, smarmy piece of work.
I was hoping the long walk back might calm your humour.
And the other one. Squash their Irish noses, will he?
Don't be so splenetic, Mulholland. Let it go. Let it go. Dislike of suspects may cloud the judgment.
Are they really suspects, sir?
We both remarked the curious similarity of story. The words used, the motives advanced. Too pat, too rehearsed, too neat. I dislike excessive neatness.
Inspector McCleavy, a moment, if you please.
I'm on a case, Lieutenant Roach. My moments are valuable.
I am well aware of it. Dr. Jarvis has just left me. In my office, if you please.
Do you hear a sound, Mulholland?
No, sir.
I do. It is the establishment closing ranks. There is a shuffle to the feet that is quite unmistakable.
There! How can you study, man? And all this fusty air.
It helps me concentrate.
You need to let nature in.
I find that a dangerous pastime.
So, how did you find the police?
Stupid.
My father reckons the inspector highly.
I reckoned him, and I found him lowly.
Off to Dublin this weekend. By the time I'm back, I expect all this will have blown over.
Let us hope so. In any case, I have nothing to disturb me. I'm innocent of any crime.
And I also, Archibald. I also am innocent.
A gentleman's club violated, two fine young fellows persecuted. What are you trying to do, McCleavy?
Solve a murder case.
Then look amongst our own kind. Hmm? You know these people. They live in the gutter, a low version of humanity. They'd cut your throat for half a crown. The girl was no better than she should be, and one of her own kind cracked her skull to steal her money. No honour among thieves, no mercy amongst whores. Now, if you want to solve this crime, that is where you look. In the gutter.
I bow to your superior knowledge, Lieutenant Roach.
Good. Now, Judge Wilson.
Is he connected to all this,
sir? No, certainly not. Quite another case, Constable.
Right, sir.
From his own home, a member of the judiciary has suffered theft.
And what was stolen?
From his own kitchen, a leg of lamb.
A leg of lamb?
Exactly. He is not best pleased, and I have promised him speedy expedition.
Once eaten and digested, mutton is, I'm sorry to say, difficult to trace.
And you can't pawn it, can you, Inspector?
Not for long.
Just do it, McCleavy. Do it well, and do it quickly.
Mulholland had been born and raised on the farm. He knew both his onions and his meat, so I had no hesitation in awarding him the leg of lamb case. While he went off to interview the kitchen maid, lest she had offered the meat out of the window, as opposed to an unlicensed hand coming in, I wandered the streets that ran like so many tributaries into the heart of Galloway's Close. I am a great believer in chance. Lady Bountiful, I call her, and when stymied or stalled in an investigation, I worship most sincerely at her altar. It is a fancy of mine that she was one of the devil's angels who was slighted by him and takes great pleasure in peaching on her former master, providing she is approached with requisite humility. I bowed my head, a humble soul. She did not let me down. As I came through the wynds, I noticed a brood of street children chase each other up and down the broken steps of one of their dwellings. One little warrior was especially king of the castle, lording it over his fellows, waving his sword with due menace in the air. It glittered in the sun.
You're in my light, McCleavy.
What do you think of my little find?
A moment, please.
It was dumped in a midden close to the scene of the crime.
I can smell that.
Cost me sixpence. Even then I had to wrench it from the king's hand. Well?
The sliver of wood found in the corpse's wound would seem to fit with this split at the head of the stick.
A fine gentleman's walking stick. And would that not also be blood at the head?
Possible.
Do you see anything else on the head?
Initials, scratched in.
A.D., unless my eyes deceive me.
That could mean anything. Anno Domini, for
instance. Or Archibald Dingwall.
I hope you know what you're doing, McCleavy.
Investigating a murder. Are you suggesting I ignore this piece of evidence?
Not at all. But I have no doubt that it will prove fruitless. And then I would suggest that you press the matter with these young men no further.
And if I decline the suggestion?
There are powerful men connected to our club, McCleavy.
I'll take note of that.
Do so. My advice is, don't cross them.
Where are you going, sir?
Out.
Can I tag along?
If you keep pace. How's the mutton situation?
I think the maid's innocent enough, but it's a daft household. The leg of lamb was hanging right by the open window.
Judges like to hang things, Mulholland.
We in a hurry, sir.
Indeed we are. There's another dainty dish to pursue. Do you recognize this, Mr. Dingwall?
No. Should I?
I believe it belongs to you.
I think not, Inspector.
It has your initials on the handle.
They may be mine, they may also apply to 1,000 other people, perhaps 1,000,000.
This is a murder weapon, sir. Smashed a young girl's skull open. It's no laughing matter.
I'm sure it is not, but what has all this to do with me?
You were seen that night, waving this implement in the air.
Seen? By whom?
We have a witness.
Then produce him.
You do possess a stick, sir. Surely every gentleman has one.
I do indeed, but it is not an affectation. I have a slight limp.
So has the devil, I'm told.
May we see it, sir?
Certainly. As you can see, they are similar, but mine is of better quality.
And not covered in blood.
It looks new bought, sir. Brand spanking new.
Not at all. A gentleman takes good care of his walking stick, Constable. If you have the good fortune to afford one someday, I'm sure you'll bear that in mind.
So ended the most unsatisfactory interview. Robert Hallard was off pursuing an oval ball in some Dublin bog and would, no doubt, be apprised and rehearsed by the time we met up. Apprised? Rehearsed? Was I, in fact, prejudging? Were they perhaps as innocent as Dr. Jarvis would have me believe? I was stuck. Lady Bountiful had already helped me once. To go back again would be to invite her scorn. But then, while I was floundering in this morass of my own making, a second lady appeared on the scene. Jean Brash sent a note.
McLeavy, I have found the name of Peggy Ambrose's pounce, Dan Gillis. I believe you know him. I have my people out looking, but for the moment, he's out of my hands. I hear that you now steal from children in the streets. Surely you could pick on someone your own size and class. J.B.
Aside from all her cheek, the letter gave me an idea. I did indeed know Dan Gillis, and I would put my own men out looking for him. But he was small fry, a petty pimp. I had arrested him a few years back for attempted extortion of money from a well-to-do young man who was caught in odd circumstances with a most unsuitable female companion. Now, if Dan was, as it were, out of everyone's hands, who knows what he might not get up to? What if he had not learned his lesson? What if he decided to put a leech on the medicine men?
Thank you, Mrs. O'Hara. Come in, Mulholland.
Would you be wanting a cup of tea, sir?
Well,
no, thank you, Mrs. O'Hara. The constable is a terrible man for business first. First and foremost.
Ah, well. There you are.
So, Mulholland, welcome to my humble abode. What do you think of this?
Oh, terrible penmanship.
Deliberately so. Read.
I saw you do the girl. Bust her head with your stick. She was my honeycomb. My loss must be my gain, or I'll trump you to McLeavy. Come this night to 23 Galloway's Close. Bring £50. 9 o'clock. I'll be waiting. Dan Gillis.
Hallard and Dingwall will both receive copies of this letter. The building on Galloway's Close is derelict. Dan Gillis will not be there, but we shall. And we shall see who arrives and what they bring.
I take it, since we meet here, Lieutenant Roach is to know nothing about this, sir.
Should there be any repercussions, you may say I commanded you to silence. You're not saying much.
You commanded me to silence.
Well, don't prevaricate with me, Constable. If something's in your teeth, spit it out.
Well, it's just... I remember you telling... Don't let dislike cloud the judgment.
Yes?
Well, not dislike, but I'm wondering if there's a bit of a obsession creeping in.
Your comment has been noted. Stay at the station. Put up your feet. I shall be at Galloway's Close.
It's a miserable night.
You can always...
I'm here.
Then stop complaining.
Not a complaint. An observation.
At least we're inside.
There's drips all over the place.
I've noticed that. Punctual. To a fault.
That's Dingwall's style, I'll wager.
Dan Gillis, are you there?
Have you brought the money?
Over here.
Wait till I get there. Then shine your light as I grab hold.
I'm coming. Don't try anything fancy. Let's have a look at you then. Inspector!
Get him, Mulholland!
Stop where you are! Police!
Are you all right, Inspector?
Aye. Which way did you go?
Up the stairs, sir.
Come on! Dan, I can't see a thing up here.
There, sir. Behind the chimney pots.
All right, my manny. Nowhere to go but down. I am James McLeavy, Inspector of Police, and you will surrender yourself unto me.
He's got to try for the other roof, sir.
Don't be a fool, man. You're under the rule of law.
They'll never make it.
No way to go but down.
Nobody could survive that fall.
Not unless they were an angel.
Shall I turn him over now, sir?
Turn him over. Here is our trophy, Mulholland.
This has not come out well.
You were warned, McLeavy. Warned. But no, no. You have to go your own way and see what has happened.
I saw, Lieutenant Roach.
You saw? Did you know? A decent young fellow lies dead and you are responsible. Did you see that? And what did you hope to accomplish by all this rigmarole?
I hope to question the man further, to put pressure on him. If he was taken at the scene, and he was there, he did respond to the note,
and
sir.
And did he have the £50 on his person to pay off this invented blackmailer?
No, he didn't.
No. So, who knows why he came? Curiosity, any number of things would you like to ask him? McLeavy, are you any good at speaking to the dead?
Sheriff Hallard, my condolences, sir. Save them for the funeral. McLeavy, you have caused the death of my son. I trust you have good reason.
I suspected him of being implicated in a murder, sir.
Do you have any proof?
Not now. I am sorry, sir.
I have left my wife at home, looking at a photograph. It is all she has left. I want the truth of this matter, Lieutenant Roach.
It will be found.
I have known you for a good man, McLeavy. But you've made a bad mistake, and it has cost my family dear. You may carry that with you for the rest of your life. Good day, gentlemen.
I am afraid, given the circumstances, that I have no option but to suspend you from duty, Inspector McLeavy, until such times as this matter is officially investigated and cleared up, one way or the other.
What about Constable Mulholland?
From your own testimony, he has played a minor part in this black farce. He will remain in service.
And Dingwall?
I interviewed him myself this morning. He had received and ignored the letter, treating it like the foolish contraption it was. He knew nothing of Hallard's intentions.
But surely they were...
If you approach him or anyone else connected to this case, I shall throw you in the cells, and believe you me, I shall not hesitate. I blame myself. I have left you on a long reign for such an extent of time that you have come to consider yourself above the petty details of the normal process of law. What fueled you in this case was not a desire for justice, but a wish to prove yourself right at all costs. You resent those above and consider yourself God of those below. Clear out your desk.
McLeavy? I hear you may be looking for a job. I could use a good doorman.
I would lose you customers, Jean.
How come?
My face does not encourage licentiousness.
Whiskey. Fine quality.
I do not lower my standards.
You're in a right mess.
I may survive.
You put the rights of whore equal to that of the high and mighty. Tut, tut.
It is my job.
As many would pass it by. My men caught up with Dan Gillis.
Huh? The pimp?
When he heard of Peggy's death, he lammed out of there, but he took some letters belonging to her from her former regular, tied up in a red ribbon. Dan was hoping to make some money out of them.
Blackmail? Well, I got that much right.
Here they are. A present from the fraternity.
I will not be compromised.
Nobody expects favors.
And you will not get them.
Don't be a fool, McLeavy. Take the damn things. One thing I did not tell you. I was fond of Peggy. She was a bright wee thing. She went her own way. So be it, but I was fond of her.
What about the bruising on her, where she had previously been beaten?
That was Dan. He confessed.
Confessed?
To keep her in line, she had a lot of spirit, you see.
What has happened to her?
He has departed Edinburgh.
In a coffin?
A fish cart. It'll be a long journey. Read the letters, James. I think you might find them of interest.
Ah, McCleavy. What are you doing here? You're not allowed near me. You're nothing now. A lost man.
You recognize these, Mr. Dingwall? These letters are your nemesis. And my salvation.
A haunch of beef, Mulholland.
Beg pardon, sir?
Stolen this morning from the house of Anderson, the shipping magnate.
The man with all the boats, sir.
In a word, yes.
I'll get on it right away.
The second piece of purloined meat. Don't be lax, Mulholland. This is very important.
Yes, sir.
Surely a matter of life and death.
Peggy Ambrose was your full deluxe, your mistress.
For a short time only.
Long enough for you to hook her out of the Happy Land. These letters are full of endearments, promises. She was to be your kept woman, and then you abandoned her. Why?
I came to my senses.
You're a liar. Nothing will ever come between us. And if I ever leave you, may God strike me down. Why did you abandon her?
My father found out. A common whore. He threatened to cut off my allowance.
So you left her back on the streets? And she ended with a man who beat her black and blue.
I didn't know that.
But you knew she wore a scarlet garter. So that night, when the trophy was named, you knew where to find it.
Yes.
And then you killed her.
No, it was an accident. I did nothing.
You best tell me the story. And you best tell it true. One sniff of a lie and I will gut you, young man. Spleen and all.
We were both drunk. Robert, more than I. He grabbed the stick, danced around the streets, called himself a musketeer. When we found Peggy, she was angry with me, threw the garter in my face, called me vicious names. He thought it was very funny, laughed in her face. Peggy always had a wild temper. She flew at him, claws out, going for his eyes. He flung up the stick to protect himself. It struck her. She screamed and fell. We ran away.
Leaving her to die?
It was dark. We didn't see. Her skull must have been paper thin. It was an accident.
When you found out about the death, you concocted the story between you?
Yes.
When you received the false letter, why did you not accompany Hallard?
He said it was best to go on his own.
Was he planning murder?
No. He said he was going to put the fear of God into this blackmailer. What a mess it all is. Oh, if only my father had left me alone.
Yeah. I'm sure it's all his fault. You will come with me to the station, but on the way we shall pay a visit to another father. You will tell him this story. Sheriff Hallard deserves to know the truth behind his son's death. No matter how painful.
It was just an accident. All of it.
And yet I sense the devil's hand. We must go. Get your coat, Mr. Dingwall. And don't forget your stick. You may need the support.
So, turned out all right, in the end.
If right is the proper word for it, yes. Mr. Roach made a surprisingly gracious apology.
I heard it, sir.
Listening at the door?
I'm passing by.
Dr. Jarvis, however, still considers me an ulcer on the body of genteel society.
And Dingwall gets off scot-free, eh?
Roach saw no point in dragging Sheriff Hallard's name through the courts, but there is a measure of retribution.
What would that be?
Dingwall's father has been told of his son's behavior. He has removed the young man from his medical studies, and he must work in his father's export firm.
Is that all?
They have a small, hot office in the Australian outback. He is to be sent there.
transportation by any other name.
So, Peggy Ambrose got some kind of justice.
Some kind. And after all, Constable, she was only a ten-a-penny whore.
Absolutely, sir. Ten-a-penny.
Now, that's a funny thing.
Sir?
One of my charges, Biddy Riddle. What is she doing coming out of Templeton's?
Buying something.
But what? Templeton's is a high-class grocer, and they charge accordingly. Biddy! Grand to see you on such a fine day.
Oh, it's enough. The weather's turned very kind, Inspector.
I see you have a wee packet there.
I have indeed.
May I look inside?
Oh, it's only a wee thing.
Oh, indulge my curiosity, Biddy. Well, well. A whole ounce of real Durham mustard, top quality.
It's for my son, Willie. A mustard poultice for his back. He works the street, a scavenger, lifting all that rubbish. His back's bad.
Mustard poultice. My mother's a great believer in that remedy.
Well, you better get on, Biddy, before it gets worse.
Eh?
His back, with all that lifting.
I'll do that. I'll do that, sure enough. Good day to you, Inspector.
Good day, Biddy.
You didn't believe her, sir?
Not for a moment. And I'll wager there were scavengers in the street both days the meat was lifted out of those windows.
Do we follow her?
No need. She lives in Fountain Close. Let us allow 15 to 20 minutes, tap upon the door, and I'll wager we'll find a haunch of the finest roast beef resting meekly in its own juice.
Covered in mustard?
The finest Durham.
And so it proved. The cook from the Anderson home was able to identify her beef from the string she had tied around it, and the thought of his ancient mother going to jail with her fingers covered in mustard was more than Willie could bear. He came clean, which, for a scavenger, was no mean feat. So there was a comical end to the sad passage of time. I often think of young Robert Hallard, wild with brandy, running down the street, waving that stick in the air, thinking he was a musketeer, dancing round the corner towards a black fate. And I wonder, as he jigged past the doorway, if there was a figure watching, cloven-hoofed and fork-tailed, Satan himself, but dressed up to the nines, very like a gentleman.
In the Trophy Club by David Ashton, Brian Cox was James McCleavy and Siobhan Redmond, Jean Brash. Other parts were played by Michael Percival Maxwell, Stephen Atoll, Tom Smith, David McHale, Eliza Langland and David Bannerman. It was directed by Patrick Rayner.